I just want to extend my welcome to you that Jess has already given you. If you are new to Grace Church, if it's your first time, if you've been here a while, you are all very, very welcome this morning. We're going to be taking a little sidestep from our current preaching series. We're just going to have a little one-off special, Bognor special preach this morning. And then next week, we'll step back into our current preaching series. But I want, before I start, I want to bring a rumor to you. Okay, there is a rumor. I don't know if you've heard this rumor, but there's a rumor going around that God doesn't like people who are not Christians. Okay, there's this rumor going around that God doesn't like people who aren't Christians. If you've heard it, normally people don't articulate it in quite that way. They would articulate it in a very different way, more that he really loves this group of people, and they're called Christians. And his favorite day of the week is a Sunday, because that's the day when they all come together, they all enjoy being together and worshipping just him, and that's his favorite day of the week. And to be honest, the people who don't go to church, well, he's not keen on them. He doesn't really like them. He's looking every day when they wake up on a Sunday morning. He looks at them and he says, "Oh, can't wait for Judgment Day. Can't wait for Judgment Day for you." That's the rumor. That's the rumor. And I want this morning to get you to understand that that rumor is completely false. We're going to squash that rumor this morning, and to realize that it isn't true, and for you to know that is good news. It's good news for you to know that rumor is not true. It's good news for you if it was an effort for you to come to church this morning. Yeah, that God doesn't have favorites. God doesn't look at you in a negative way like that. It's good news for you if you're a Christian as well this morning, that he doesn't have a level of favorite Christians that he looks at. Yeah, God doesn't have that. Even if you think you're a rubbish Christian this morning, this is good news for you that this rumor is not true. Hence why I've titled my preach this morning, "Come Home Whoever You Are." Come home whoever you are. Come and enjoy God this morning. And hopefully this morning, in us looking at this, we will eradicate the rumor. We'll get you to understand that God gets excited when people come home. God gets excited when people come and find him. I'm hopefully going to help you to get that from Luke chapter 15. So if you have a Bible or a Bible app, you can turn to it. Also, it will appear on the screen if you do need to follow along, that's fine. What I want to basically do this morning is to understand the message of Jesus, either for the first time. You might not know this message very well. It might be that you've heard the message of Jesus many, many, many times, but I want you to understand it in a fresh way. And in doing that, what it will do is excite you. Excite you in your walk with God, whether it's the middle of your journey, near the end of your journey, the start of your journey. Actually, this will excite you to enjoy your time with God, enjoy your walk with God. And so we're going to read from chapter 15. We're going to go from verse 1 and 2, and then we're going to jump down a little bit as well. So let's read from verse 1. "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, 'This man welcomes sinners and eats with them.'" What's going on here? What's happening? The whole of Luke 15, the whole of this chapter is dominated by these first two verses. If we don't understand the first two verses, who Jesus is talking to here, then we miss the whole point of what Luke 15 is all about. These are people. Jesus is talking to people who have fallen for this rumor. These people have fallen for the rumor, and Jesus wants to make sure that they understand it. In the rabbis' case, the people who were the rabbis at the time, they were saying, "I'm sure God loves religious people. Those non-religious people, I'm not sure he would like." They were probably upset that Jesus is giving so much time and so much of his love and his enthusiasm towards the non-religious people at the time. And so Jesus then preaches two parables. He preaches a parable about a lost sheep and a parable about a lost coin. And then we're going to be going to the parable we're looking at this morning in verse 11, the parable of the lost son. So there, Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger son said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am, starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and he went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him. He was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him, 'What's going on?' 'Your brother has come home,' he replied. 'And your father has killed the fattened calf because as he has him back safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I have been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who squandered your property with prostitutes, come home, you kill the fattened calf for him.' 'My son,' the father said, 'you've always been with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because your brother, this brother of yours, was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.'" I know it says in some of the translations that you've got the parable of the lost son. I'm afraid to tell you that the title is wrong. It's the wrong title here. So often we read it and see it's the parable of the lost son. The title, by the way, wasn't in the original manuscripts that he would have written. Someone's put that in, and they've put in the wrong title. It's the parable of the two lost sons. There are two sons in this story, and it's like the story is split in two. You go to a theater, if you've ever been to the theater, you've got your first part, then you've got your interval, and then you've got your second part. It's like there are two acts in this story. So act one, we're going to hopefully extinguish this rumor by looking at the two acts that happened. Act one is the younger brother. There were many things in Jesus' stories that would have astonished, it would have astounded the people listening at the time. And the first thing that they would have been astounded by was the son asking for his inheritance. In that time, you didn't do that. That's not what you did. You didn't ask for your inheritance in that time. What you're saying in that moment in asking for inheritance, he was saying, "Dad, right, I know you're alive. I wish you were a little bit dead because then I can have my stuff. I want your stuff." In essence, what he's saying is, "I want your stuff and I don't really want you." That's in essence what he's saying when he's saying that he wants him to divide up the property, to divide up the estate. The second half of verse 12, however, it would have astonished them more, because the father, what he should have done is he should have kicked and punched and verbally been very violent towards his son to get him out of the house if he's asked such a thing. But he doesn't. He doesn't. He doesn't do that. It says he divided the property between them. The Greek word property would have been bios or bios, however you want to pronounce it. And obviously we get the word biology from there. We get the word life from there. So in the story, the father really divided his life between the sons. Why does it say that? Well, the father's estate was his land, it was his wealth, it was his how people viewed him in society, his status in the community. And what the son is saying in saying, can you divide up your land? Can I have my inheritance? He's saying, Dad, I want you to tear your life apart. I want you to rip up your life. I want you to tear up your standing in the community. I want you really to tear yourself apart. But the incredible thing is that the father does it. The father just does it. It's incredible, incredible story. However, afterwards, the son, he then goes off and he's got everything. And in that moment, when he's spent everything, when he has squandered absolutely everything, you see his misery. Jesus shows him, shows the listeners at the time, the misery that comes from what he does. So often, when we run from God, when you run from the Father, it starts off feeling free. You feel really free. But really, we end up in misery. He runs from the Father. He ends up in misery. It's the same for us. We start by feeling free. It's like you're in a plane. John Robbins, in a couple of months, he's going to jump out of a plane. Okay? So you jump out of a plane and you go, I'm free. I'm full. This is amazing. And then you realize you don't have a parachute. Yeah? I'm free. I'm free. I'm free. And then you realize the misery. I don't have a parachute. It says in verse 13, not long after, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, squandered his wealth in wild living. The word wild, asatos in the Greek, it's like that. It's that recklessness. And for a season, recklessness can be fun. You go on holiday and you can be reckless. I'll have 10 ice creams today. Why not? It's okay for a season, but then you realize the misery. Oh, I shouldn't have spent so much on 10 ice creams. Yeah, you can realize the misery. He's living an easy come, easy go lifestyle, and then there's reality. That moment of reality. Famine. Famine hits the land. Famine hits the land. When we break our attachment from God, when we separate ourselves from God, we end up then attaching to something else. We end up attaching ourselves to something else. And this attachment is not a sonship like he had before. It was a slavery. He went out as a hired hand for someone else. He was a slave for someone else. Attached to someone else. It might be drugs. It might be alcohol. It might be sex. It might be an employee. It might be a spouse. It might be sport. It might be a hobby. It might be television. It might be books. It might be a fancy house. It might be clever gadgets. I don't know. Whatever it is. But the attachment, it might be a crude attachment, or it might be something that's a lot more refined. If we break loose from God, we attach ourselves to another, and we end up in, whether it's crude or refined, this attachment leads us to something else. It leads us to the pigsty. It leads us to that pigsty. You and I, just like we heard from Mel this morning about creation, you and I, we were made to be filled with God and to enjoy him forever. There's something called the Westminster Catechism. It's a question and answers about the Christian faith. And one of the questions is, what's the chief end of man? What are we on earth to do? What was man created for? And it says, man's chief end is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. John Piper says something similar, just changes it a little bit. Man's chief end is to glorify God by enjoying him forever. That's what we were made for. We were made to be home with the Father. That's where we can find our enjoyment and our fulfillment. If we run from God, if we take our earthly inheritance of time and of money and of energy and we attach it to other things, we might be buried worth billions. We might be buried in a ditch. Our future will always be swine food for all eternity. That is the misery that Jesus describes when we run from the Father's house. And the son discovers this, and then he comes to this realization. He realizes, oh, what am I doing? Servants in my Father's house, they get so much more than I'm getting it right now. He comes up with a plan. Okay, he comes up with a plan. The first part of his plan is to go home. That's the first part of his plan. And it might seem quite simple. It's, I'm just going home. I'm just going to a place. But it's more than a place. Home is more than a place. It's a relationship. It's where he belongs. It's where you're accepted. He longs to come home. Man's chief end is to enjoy God, to know him, to be home with him. You know what? God gets excited. God gets excited when people far from him find their way back home. God gets excited about that. As a church, you know what? We are not Tesco. Yeah, we are not opening new branches when we start new sites. We're not opening new branches when we plant churches. We have a God who gets excited when people find their way home. So what we want to do is we want to help people find their way home. We want to guide people to get home. And we'll do what it takes to help people get home. So that's the first part of his plan is to go home. The second part of his plan, he says, I will go to my Father. I will say to my Father, I am not worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired hands. He's not requesting in this moment to become a slave. A slave they would have taken from the land. They would have lived on the land. He's not requesting that. He's saying, I want to be a hired hand. I want to pay back. He's trying to pay back to the Father. He wants to earn his way back. He's trying to earn his way back. That's his plan. So that's what he does. He heads home. He's about to unveil his plan. He first of all realizes he's miserable. He then comes up with a plan. But then we see the lavished grace of the Father. We see the enthusiasm of the Father when the boy comes home. We see this when he runs. He runs to the son. In that culture, children would have run. Little boys, little girls, they would have run. Youth would have run. Women probably would have run. But men who owned an estate, no, they would not run. That wasn't the case. What Jesus is showing is he's showing this complete and utter emotional abandonment, his overjoy to have the son home, and he runs towards him. And at this point, the son's trying to roll out his plan. This is my plan, Dad. I want to come and work for you. I want to earn my way back into this. I don't really want to be part of the family. I just want to work for you and pay you back that way because I know that I've done something wrong. He doesn't even have a chance. The father doesn't even give him a chance to roll out his plan. He doesn't do that. He doesn't let him tell him he wants to earn his way back. He shows complete emotional abandonment, runs to him, says to a servant, get the robe. Get the robe, get a ring on his finger, put sandals on his feet. The ring is so significant. The ring is a signet ring. So you would have had a ring, rather than signing something, they would have stamped their signet ring on a contract. They wouldn't have signed it. And in doing that, you're saying, this is the family seal. That's the family seal. This family is signed to say they'll do this with the property or that with the property. That's how you would sign a contract, with the family seal. He's given him the signet ring. He said, this is the family seal. You are back in the family. You don't have to earn your way back. You don't have to try and even get back into the family. You are in. The son says, I don't want to be brought back into the family. He's saying, I want to earn my way back. Please let me earn my way back. And the father saying, no, 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 no. I'm not letting you earn your way back. You are a son. You have come home. He's become a son again, just like that. In a sheer moment of grace, in a sheer moment of love, he grants it to him. He throws a party. He kills the fattened calf. And they want to commemorate the day. They want to celebrate the day. Whoever you are, come home. Come and find the place where you were meant to be. Because the father in the parable, he is representing God. If you're a Christian or you're not Christian this morning and you're beating yourself up and you want to try really hard, you're trying really hard to get back to God. You want to try and get your way back to God. You've created like a theme tune in your life. Working my way back to you, God. Yeah, you're trying to earn your way back. That's what you're trying to do. Do you know what? It's God will accept you. If you say, God, I want to come home, he accepts you in just like that. In a sheer moment of grace, he will accept you. All of us are like the younger son, because when we first come to God, we say, I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. I want to earn my way back. I want to earn my way back. I want to try really hard. I want to pull up my bootstraps. I'm going to get it right this time. However, the God of the Bible, he has none of it. He gives us the full rights as children of God through Jesus Christ. And so Act 1 ends like that. Act 1 ends with a little summary of this, I think. God gets excited when people far from him find their way back home. However, there is one more character, and that one more character, I think, summarizes Act 2. But many Christians don't. Yeah, do we get excited in the way that God gets excited about it? Let's open Act 2. So Act 2 is the older brother. Act 2 is a parable to show how the heart of God is, and then to show how far from the heart of God and how different from the heart of God God's religious people can be. This is for us. Reading this, I sometimes just felt in my heart there's a bit of me that's still a bit of an older brother type. Still a bit religious. Okay, and probably because it's in me, I believe there's probably some of it within you, which means there's probably some of it within our church. So I just know that this is a message for us today. The older brother has not learned that the lost son has been found. Almost always when people think of this story, it's all about Act 1. It's all about the younger brother. His acceptance into the family. And you imagine the people listening at the time, they would have started to well up with tears. I can't believe it's such an amazing story. So lovely, this story. And just really sentimental terms. But really, they were not. Okay? They were stewing inside. They would have been stewing inside. That's why verses 1 and 2 are really important. You've got to look at who Jesus is talking to. If you look at the context, if you look at the people that Jesus is speaking to, you see that they would have been offended. They would have been offended. The younger brother is the tax collector. The younger brother is the sinners and the prostitutes that Jesus is talking to. And the older brother is the Pharisee. This is the kind of preach that gets Jesus killed. Right, Jesus, you read about Jesus and he does all these amazing things. He brings people back from the dead. He heals people of all their infirmities. Surely, if you've got someone like that, you go, all right, let's open a hospital and he's going to run it. Right, that's the type of guy Jesus was. Yeah, he gets killed. Why do they kill him? It's not the type of guy you would get to kill. Actually, it's because of the stuff that he says. It's because of these moments here. He is offending them in what he is saying. The purpose of Jesus telling this parable was not to get a sentimental message to people. That's not why he was doing it. He was telling them that their approach to God, how they viewed God, how they came to God, was completely and utterly wrong. And that's not the way that you are to approach God. Jesus is predominantly talking to the Pharisees when he's speaking about the older brother. And Act 2 continues when a conflict arises. The older brother calls a servant over to find out what's going on. And the servant tells him that his brother's come home. He is fuming. He is so angry at this happening. He's angry. He said, I'm not going in there. I'm not going into that feast. I'm not joining that party. And him saying that, he's saying, I do not want to be part of the family. But what does the father do? The father comes out. The father comes out to the son. It's important to note that the father doesn't just go out to the, he doesn't just run to the younger son. He also goes out to the older son. It's not the flip side of the rumor. It's not that then God loves people who are new to Christianity or don't know God and doesn't like people who are Christians very much. It's not a flip side of the rumor. Okay, God loves both. Yeah, he loves them both. He goes out to the younger, he goes out to the older, and he pleads with him. Don't be like the older brother. Don't refuse to come in. Although the elder brother is furious, he's most fumed by the expense. He sees his inheritance starting to dwindle because everything that the father owns is the older son's. It's his stuff. And he sees it just starting to go because the meat in those times was a delicacy. You wouldn't have had it very often. It would have been more vegetables and things like that. And he's just seeing that his inheritance is being used in a way that he doesn't approve of because the most expensive delicacy of the time would have been a fattened calf. You would have only had that if you were having a really public party, if you were inviting the whole town. It would have been an expensive event that he's throwing and he's seeing his inheritance just falling away. So what does the elder brother care for? Well, really, it's very similar to what the younger brother cares for. Yeah, the younger brother, what younger brother used to love, he had the guts to leave for. So the younger brother loved money and things like that, and he left. I think the older brother loves the same things, but he just didn't have the balls to leave. He really wanted to party with his friends and not with the father. He cares about the father's things, but he doesn't care about the father. He cares about the estate and he cares about the expense. Everything that he had, everything that the father had, was his. He wanted to spend it in his way. He cares for the father's things, but he does not care for the father's heart. But how does the father respond? He is, again, tender. He's so tender in his answer. He says, my son, I still want you in the feast. And we're now on the edge of our seat. End of the story coming. What's going to happen? We're asking the questions. How will he respond? Will they come back together? Will they be reunited then? Yeah, EastEnders kicks in, and we never find out. The parable ends. There's an end, and we never find out what's happening. It's a cliffhanger. What's Jesus trying to get across? He basically wants to leave it for the rabbis that he's talking to make a decision. Are you going to be like the older brother? He's left it dangling for churches like ours. Are you going to make a decision? He's left it for you, if you're a Christian, to make a decision. You see, there are two ways that we can be lost from God. We see it in the younger brother doing stuff that's really, really, really bad. But you see it in the older brother who's trying to be really, 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 really good. And him trying to be really, really, really good is he's trying to manipulate him and say, I've been good, you owe me. That's what he's trying to do. This shows how people in society are as well. This is why Jesus Christ is the only answer to our nation. He is the only hope for our nation. You've got one group of people who think that bigoted people are the problem, and we need to, if we get rid of them, and people think more liberally, well, it'll be fine. And they're your younger brother types. And then you've got your older brother types who think, well, rebellion is the problem. Acting more religious would be much better. If everyone could be a little bit more conservative about their views and do it this way, yeah, we would be okay. And they're your older brother types. But the worst of all, you've got like a third group who pretend to be like an older brother, but then they act in a secret double life like the younger brother. It's a simple story. This whole story is a simple story. But it's a catalogue of how people respond to God. In this, Jesus is saying that I want you to recognize that that both brothers were equally lost. Both brothers are equally lost. And just like Jesus, I don't want to leave you with a little sentimental message. I want to challenge you. Which are you? Are you lost? Because the gospel of Jesus Christ is not for morality or immorality. It's not for being good and being bad. It's not religion or irreligion. It's not halfway or in the middle. It's something completely different. So whether you're a younger brother or an elder brother, you know what? We need to come home. You need to come in to the party. Enjoy what God's got for you. The chapter of Luke ends with the elder brother. He's standing outside. A choice is to be made. He needs to make a choice. Will he complain about God's inclusivity, or will he grasp it with both hands? Is he going to enjoy it? Is he going to enjoy what God has got for him? Jesus wants us to compare and contrast the brothers, but he also wants us to see ourselves in the story too. He wants us to see that there's something missing in our own lives. We are to long for something. Inside of us, we long for something, and he wants us to see that. He wants us to seek for something. You know what? He wants us to hope for home. That's what he wants from us. There is only one way home. God is calling you home. Will you come? You might be lost son number one. You might be lost son number two. But will you come home? You know what? We need to be melted. And we need to love what it costs God to bring us home. As I mentioned earlier, the story is a collection of three parables. Parable number one is the lost sheep. Someone goes out, finds the sheep. The shepherd goes out to find the sheep. Parable number two is a lost coin. Someone flipping their house around trying to find this coin. Where is it? They find the coin. And then you've got parable number three, the third story, the son. But nobody goes out to get the son. Nobody looks for the son. Jesus done this deliberately. Who should have gone? Anyone in that culture would know the answer. It was the elder brother's job. In order to keep the family together, to keep family being a family, the elder son should have gone, even if it cost him his inheritance, even if it cost him his life. He should have gone. And that's the key. When the father had divided his property between them, the younger brother got a share, which means that everything the father had was his. And it cost him to throw, the party that was thrown would have cost the elder brother. So when the father brings the younger son back into the family, he can only do it. He can only do it at the expense of the younger son, at the expense of the older son. It is not free. Somebody has got to pay. Of course, someone's got to pay for the younger son to come home. The restoration was free. It was all grace. But for the older son, it was immensely expensive. It cost him dearly. Often when there's a parable about forgiveness, there's just a tiny little picture, or sometimes a bigger picture, of Jesus' death on a cross. You need to know it's only possible to come home through the death and resurrection of Jesus. We deserve to be punished. On some level, in verse 1, when they're asking, who is he to treat sinners as if they were sinless people? The rabbis were right in that. It's not fair. Except Jesus, the sinless one. He becomes the sinner, capital S, for you and for me. Well, the Bible actually says he became sin itself and was nailed to a cross for you and for me. We're able to be forgiven because there was something better than a fattened calf being slaughtered for us. We as a collective human race, we need a true elder brother. God cannot just bring us back in the family, adopt us, accept us, clothe us, except at the expense of the elder brother. The son in the story, unfortunately, he gets a Pharisee. He gets one that's not willing to go out and save him, to go out and rescue him, to go out and bring him home. But you know what? The joyous truth for us is that we do. We have a true elder brother. We have one who loved and obeyed the Father. One who came to earth, loved God with all of his heart, soul, mind, and strength. He loved his neighbor as himself. You know what? He earned it. He earned everything. In the way that we couldn't earn to get back, he earned everything. He earned the ring. He earned the robe. He earned everything. But do you know what? He didn't get a ring and a robe. He doesn't get a robe. He gets stripped and flogged. He doesn't get the fattened calf. He got vinegar. He doesn't get a ring of honor. He gets the crown of thorns. In other words, salvation is absolutely free for us, but it's unbelievably costly for Jesus. Jesus puts a bad elder brother in the story so that we can long for the true one. Yeah, so that we can long for the true elder brother. We don't just need an elder brother who will go into the next town to go and get us and save us. We need the one that comes from heaven to earth. We don't need an elder brother who will do it at the cost of his wallet. He does it at the cost of his life. Have you been moved? Have you been melted by what the true elder brother did to bring you home? Because if we see the price and we see the need, it will change our approach to God. You won't be pressing down to try really hard, and you won't be wanting to rebel and finding something better. You'll truly be a Christian. Come home, whoever you are, good, bad, indifferent. Yeah, come home, whoever you are. Come and enjoy God. Find the enjoyment that you can have in Him. Times like yesterday were great, weren't they? It was so fun to be playing cricket, hitting sixes. That feeling when you hit a six, oh, it's great. It's the minimalist. It's just the dimmest spark of what it will be like in our eternal future. Days like yesterday were great, but they are the dimmest of what it will be like in the future. What it will be like when Jesus comes back. Do we truly, truly know that? Someday our true elder brother, he's going to come back. He is going to wipe away suffering. He's going to wipe away tears. He's going to give us new bodies. Great news for you. If you have ailments, you know, you're going to give us new bodies. And we will be at the ultimate feast, even better than yesterday. Right, it'll be even better than yesterday. In Matthew 8, Jesus says, many will come from east and west, sit down with Abraham, Isaac and Jacob in the feast of the kingdom of heaven. That's our future. That's where we can look to. What kind of people would we be if we could almost just taste that? You know what, we can. What kind of church would we be if we could almost just know that that's where we're going to? How many more people could we reach through washing cars? Yeah? We would have a quiet confidence. We would not be anxious about much of anything, to be honest. We would love people even when it cost us. We would never lose hope. Yeah? Even if we lost wealth, even if we lost relationships, we would never lose hope. You know what? We would be worshippers. We would be worshipping in our lives, which we're going to do in a moment. As the band come up, I've got a question to ask you and an invitation. What are you finding your significance and security in? What are you looking for to satisfy your deepest need? The one that's in your heart, that need of love or of meaning. Is it your family? Is that the most important thing? Is it your career? Is that the most important thing? I don't know, but whatever it is, if it's not God, it may be a good thing, but you're never home. If you make it the thing, what you'll end up doing is you'll be wandering, just wandering around, traveling, and you'll never reach home. Why does the story end unfinished? Jesus wants us to listen to Him. Whether we are elder brother types, whether we are younger brother types, He is appealing to us. He is flipping the rumor on its head. We are in this parable. So come home. Come home, whoever you are, because you know what? God gets excited when we come home. Let's stand. We're gonna worship this God. We're going to worship the true elder brother this morning, wholeheartedly. We're going to enjoy Him. I want us to enjoy God this morning. I'm going to pray, and then we're going to sing. God, we love that You brought us home. We could never have walked home. We could never have made it home. We could never have gone into the party, Lord, unless it was for you. You, the Father, came out. You came out and you welcomed us in. You pull us in. You draw us in. And Lord, you get excited when we come home. And this morning, as we worship, as we fix our eyes on Jesus, as we fix our eyes on the true elder brother, will we enjoy you? Imagine what a people we would be if we grasped afresh what you did for us, God, daily. Will we do that? Will we grasp afresh daily what you are doing for us, we pray. So we're going to sing. Let's sing, let's celebrate, let's enjoy God this morning.